When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Have you been using Mint to manage your finances? First, you probably know the bad news. Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There is a better alternative. Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. I have been using Monarch Money for over a year now, and it makes my weekly money dates so much easier and a lot less stressful. I tried all of the other personal finance apps, but they just didn't work for me. I love Monarch because I can see exactly where my money is going and track my goals all at the same time. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, your investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Monarch has a tool that also lets you easily import your data from Mint so you can keep all of your tags and categories. And unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, very intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. And one of the features I love most is Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, your family, or your financial advisor. You can invite them to your account at no extra cost. They get their own login, and you can have a joint view of your finances. Monarch is also the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up automatic rules for transactions. You can go to town with Monarch. Plus, they have ad-free privacy you can trust. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of the show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. Hey, I'm Shauna Comptongame. This is Millennial Money. And today we have another Millennial Music Chat with Mike McColgan from the Street Dogs.
Millennial Money with Shauna Comptongame. It will expand your brain.
Lifelong bus donor and lead singer of the punk band Street Dogs, Mike McColgan has not always taken the easy road in the music business. After a stint serving his country in the military, McColgan became the original lead singer of the Dropkick Murphys. Right before the Dropkicks were finding the success they have today, McColgan left the band to pursue his lifelong dream and family tradition to become a Boston firefighter. After a few years on the job, music was still calling McColgan, so he left the fire department and formed his current band, Street Dogs. Today, McColgan is back as a dispatcher for the Boston Fire Department, while Street Dogs are still currently working on a new album due out this fall, and they are hitting the road this summer on the Vans Warped Tour, which you could actually find a link in our on our website. So check that out and check them out this summer as they crisscross the country on the Vans Warped Tour. I also worked with Mike a few years ago, and he is one of those salt of the earth kind of dudes that is just, you know, down to earth, cool guy, want to have a great conversation. You're also going to love his Boston accent. It's really not fake. He proves that you could just never give up on your dreams or your calling. So enjoy our conversation with lead singer of Street Dogs, Mike McColgan, as he talked about never having regrets for leaving the Dropkick Murphys and the Street Dogs' new album due out this fall. and his hometown favorites and current Super Bowl champs, the Tom Brady-led New England Patriots, they might just have a few more rings in their future if he has anything to say about it.
Well, they say that punk rock has died away. I don't believe a word they say. Sing for tomorrow, sing for today. We all need a little punk rock and roll.
So, Michael, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I love your guys' music. I discovered it when we worked together a few years ago. For those who may not be aware of Street Dogs music, tell us a little bit about the Street Dogs and how you guys became a band.
It was around late 2002. A buddy of mine, Jeff Erna, who was actually the very first drummer for Dropkick Murphys, he was working with a guy, Rob Godotti, and they had some songs, and they didn't have anybody to sing on them, and Rob had brought my name up, and Jeff called me up, and I went down into the cellar, and we bashed away at a handful of songs, and I thought at the time it was just going to be a brief thing, and that turned into a demo. The demo turned into the Savin Hill record, and, you know, Savin Hill record morphed into some local shows, and then touring with Flog and Molly and the Briggs, and that turned into a successor record deal with DRT, and that morphed into two albums, like Back to the World, Fade American Dream. That morphed into a Hellcat deal, which saw State of Grace, the self-titled record, and then, you know, on with the Pirates Press, and, you know, we got to tour around the world. We got to do a lot of tours of the U.S., do the Vans Warped Tour, which, you know, we'll be doing this summer.
Oh, really? Oh,
from
cool.
From July 6th to the 16th, we'll be on the tour.
Oh, cool.
It's been a whirlwind experience for us. It really took me by surprise, and I'm grateful for it. And I really didn't see it coming, but I'm grateful, you know, at the same time. And we've been a band that, you know, has worked hard for everything we got, and the people who support us and come to see our shows and buy the records or buy the T-shirts are just salt of the earth, solid, like, you know, hard work and people, and we're lucky. I'm very grateful, Jeff. I'm a lucky guy. We still get to do it. You know, we're working on a new record now, and I'm really, really, like, grateful and still kind of blown away about, like, how it's all, like, unfolded.
Right. Well, you mentioned that other Boston band you used to be with, the Dropkick Murphys. How did you actually get into music and being with them?
Well, me and Ken were friends, and we were big fans of the Outlets, you know, Rick Barton's, the group he had with his brother Dave. And, you know, we would go to see the Outlets play, and, you know, somehow we talked Rick into doing some songs with us. You know, me and Kenny, you know, we're going to a flurry of shows at that time and buying tons of music. We were just fully immersed in, like, you know, punk rock and going to shows, and it really consumed us, and it was a positive force for the both of us. And, you know, Rick propelled everything. He had, you know, been in the Outlets, and he, you know, was a great songwriter, still is. And we brought Jeff Erna into that fold, and that turned into some 7-inch singles, and Jeff moved on, and that turned into, you know, a Hellcat deal, and, you know, then came Do or Die, and it was probably around, I think, April 2000, actually April 98, I exited the group to seek a position with the Boston Fire Department, and I saw that through, but, you know, music found its way back to my doorstep, and, you know, back to the circus, you know.
Oh, I think that's an interesting story that you have. Like, so why did you decide that you want to become a firefighter, and then how did you come back actually to music?
Well, my uncle Kevin O'Toole, he was a firefighter, and you know, I was sort of enamored by the fire service here in the city of Boston, and I actually work for as a dispatcher for the Boston Fire Department now.
Okay, cool.
So I am back with it. I'm back on the communication side of it, and you know, we're pretty much deeply embedded with the suppression, the firefighting force, and it's a great job, and I love being back with it. It's like sort of a second family for me. So there was a family history for me with the job. My uncle Kevin was on it, and you know, when I was young, I got to check out, you know, Engine 18, you know, his firehouse, and I think even as far back as that, I thought to myself as a kid, like, I really want to maybe, you know, give this a shot if I get a chance. And I'd been in the U.S. Army and been to Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and was a veteran. So when the civil service test came up, I took it. And fortunately, I got selected. And, you know, it was the time that I was on was amazing. I was on for 4 years. And, you know, that was around the time that Street Dog started to form up. You know, like I told you earlier, like, I didn't think that Street Dogs was going to morph into anything that, you know, would have record contracts on the table and tour offers and things like that. But it did. So it came a point where, you know, am I going to do it all full blast or not? And I decided to go full blast with being in the band and touring. And we were, for a while, we were doing, you know, 7-8 months a year touring. And it was a pretty relentless schedule, but I have no regrets. It kind of laid the groundwork for what we have today, and you know, our fans and friends and family were like insanely supportive and had our backs throughout all that, and it's been nice. You know, a lot of us today we work and we do the band and we find a way to make it work.
Right.
Life does not happen bi-weekly, so why should your payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin, it's an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Listen, the money you get from Earnin, it could do a lot of things. Maybe you spend it on a gift for someone special in your life, or in my case, an unexpected and very expensive trip to the vet for my pup Winnie. Or maybe you use the money towards your upcoming rent payment. There are lots of ways the Earnin money could go to use. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability, security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin, T-A-L-K-I-N, money, under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin, money, under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Talking about money is hard. You know this already. All over the world, people are taught to never talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. On 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meeting from executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines, host and financial conversationalist Carl Richards will remove money from that list by having frank, funny, and often difficult conversations about money, the kind we're all told not to have, with guests from all walks of life. In each episode, Carl will invite a new guest to answer the question, "What does money mean to you?" Their answers will reveal much more than their attitudes about money, spanning revelations about identity, community, faith, family, and the true meaning of wealth. Tune in to hear deep conversations about money and the meaning it holds in our lives. You can find 50 Fires on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So growing up in Boston, you grew up in the Seven Hill area?
I was born and raised in Seven Hill, and now I live in the Neponset section.
Well, when you were growing up, who were you listening to that influenced you that wanted to get into music?
I'd have to say the Clash were pivotal.
Yeah,
like Stiff Little Fingers was another band that was really something special and potent and powerful and explosive and, you know, questioned the status quo and railed against injustice and fought for equality. And, you know, Elvis Costello and the Attractions was something that was, I thought, substantive and good songwriting. And I don't think anybody wrote a better breakup song than Elvis Costello.
Right.
I didn't mean The Police, like the early Police, like the first couple records.
Yeah.
You know, like Outlanders to More and, you know, like Regatta to Blanks and Yada Mandala. Those are great, great, great records. I would have to say, like, Cox Borough was pretty pivotal, like CM69, The Business, like the early 80s Oi was something that was really big here in Boston. And, and you know, when we were going to shows around here, everybody was spinning that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the Murphys or in Street Dogs, you know, you can hear those influences are pretty prevalent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the good thing about Oi and Street Punk, The Business most specifically, was that it had a very middle-class feel to it. And it was, you know, I think what it did was it was like, hey, like, stand up and, stand up for equality, stand up for equal pay, and keep your eyes open, read between the lines, and, you know, don't necessarily, you know, buy into everything that the government or the media is telling you, you know. So,
right.
I mean, it was, you know, for us, street punk in a way was sort of like almost like another news outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And It was huge for me. It was absolutely huge. It opened my eyes, and you know, like I said, I mentioned the Clash first. You know, like listening to "Give Him Enough Rope." I mean, the self-titled "I'm Giving Enough Rope," "London Calling," "Sandinista," or "Combat Rock." It was literally like spinning the globe,
right?
You know, in school, like you got to hear about political unrest and in inequality across the world, and how Strummer's found a way to rail against it. And, you know, he was, in my estimation, I got to say, Joe Strummer and Mick Jones were like, you know, one of the best songwriting duos ever. The Clash was a huge influence on us. And then later on, bands like Rancid relit that flame for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember when Rancid came along. They came along at a time when, you know, for a while, you know, metal was a big thing, and then all of a sudden, Nirvana dropped their songs. But for a long time, you know, bubbling underneath that, you know, punk rock and indie rock or alternative, like postmodern, whatever they were calling it at
the
time,
right,
was always there. It was always there, you know. But you know, like, I would say bands like, you know, Rancid and the Bouncing Souls, they have a huge impact on us too, as far as influences.
Right, right. Well, you mentioned before too that you have a new album that you guys are working on right now, and it's been a minute since you guys had an album out. When do you expect the new album to come out?
I would say the fall, like September, October, would be a realistic timeline. And we're very excited about what we have song-wise. At the same time, I think we're taking more time because we want to make sure we get it right. And we have that. We do have the luxury a little bit of being a little bit more of taking our time than in the past. Like we're still touring and we're still doing shows, but not at the clip we were doing it before.
Right.
And that clip was very, very super active and super busy and demanded. It had to do with deadlines hovering over you. And that was good sometimes, it was bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, good music came from those deadlines and sometimes stuff that I, you know, wish we'd taken a little bit more time with. But I think now with the working title for that record is Stand for Something or Die for Nothing. And I'm very, very proud and excited and not really ambivalent or feeling weird or like wondrous about how people are going to perceive it. I think people are really going to love it. I think it's one of our better pieces of work. I'm excited about it, and we'll be getting it ready to go, you know, maybe on the later end of summer, yeah. Early fall.
That's cool.
We're going to be with Century Media.
Okay.
We signed to Century Media, too, and they're going to be putting it out. So we're grateful to be working with them. And our brothers, I failed to mention earlier, like you want to talk about influences, like a band like Sick of It All is another prime influence, too, on us. I mean, some of our songs have a harder edge or have, like lean a little in the hardcore feel, and that band is... In my eyes, and most everybody else in the band is probably the most pivotal, powerful, potent, and exceptional hardcore band in the history of the genre. And we were on the label with them. So, you won't find a harder working, more honest live, like, or studio, like band like that. They're like standard bearers, and we're like super, super pumped to be on the label with them.
Well, that's awesome. Well, you mentioned about your songwriting and then also your uncle, Kevin O'Toole. You have a song about him and you have songs about your time in the Dropkick Murphys and stuff like that. What is your songwriting process, and especially approaching this new album? Like, what do you go and what inspires you to write?
I think for better or for worse, politics is always found its way.
Yeah,
into our songwriting process, and I think every record for our band has always been a look inside where we're all at as people, or what's on our mind, or what's bothering us, or what we're happy, glad, mad, sad about. And then, you know, one of the biggest things about the group was to always like. Remember where you came from and never forget that and keep your feet on the ground and stay right sized and try to help people and then remember people who are like that. So the eulogy songs like Fighter and Kevin J. O'Toole, those are big, big songs for us because I think in large part when we play live, wherever we played, people on their own have made it their own and have attached people in their lives that have, you know, been influential or powerful or have moved them. They've done that. And, so that figures into our songwriting process. And I think on this latest record, we've kind of like spread it out a little bit and written about, it moved out topic-wise from things that we haven't really gone into before, but we stayed true to what we do as well at the same time. I mean, for me, like, a big part of what we do is singing for the everyday, you know, man and woman, you know, worker or college student struggling to squeak by or person with three or four jobs. Like, I came from a background where, like, all my family members were a part of organized labor, and I've come to find over time that has been a voice of advocacy and support and equality for people, at work, and that's found its way into the songs big time. And then my military service has found its way into the songs, mm-hmm. and advocacy and support and thanks to our nation's men and women who have served is a big thing. And we've talked about substance abuse in the songs too, and the pitfalls and danger that all of us in the band have lost people. And I mean, there's a mm-hmm. huge opiate epidemic in the country now, and yeah, it's really, if you're a songwriter, it's impossible not to look at that too.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's something that, I think the gravity of that problem and the consistency of that problem and just how horrible and how many people it's taken and continues to take is something that not only with our band, but with a lot of other bands, it's something that they touch on too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and a problem like that is also just in middle class America these days too. So,
yeah, I think so. I think a lot of the American dream got outsourced. I think,
right.
We had a song actually on the self-titled album, "The Ballad of Detroit," that was a B-side. I thought it should have made the record, but we all voted it down and. Mm-hmm. And it didn't make it, but we had a deluxe edition of the record and it made it. It kind of talked about that. It's sad when profit is the sole driving force behind business and people kind of get lost in the equation. I feel like in respect to America in manufacturing and like that was a big part of the American identity in our country, with the Industrial
yeah.
Revolution and then
right.
You get into the 40s, you get into the 30s and 40s and 50s, you start talking, the world wars and military manufacturing and then the automotive industry and then appliances and things of the like. That fueled the middle class in this country and gave the American dream much of its identity.
It seemed like in the 80s,
greed, profit, and, make more money than the next guy instead of common decency and business with a conscience,
Right.
Like greed became a prevailing thing, and it was good to be greedy, and it was good to wipe people out, and it was good to tell people you're fired,
right?
I think there's way too. I think that sentiment again has risen up in our country, in fear and scapegoating, yeah. and there's a divisive tone now that's oof,
right?
Really,
right.
Really, 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 really bad. Like not like I've never seen in my life,
right? Yeah,
These are definitely, you want to talk about songwriting. For punk bands, it's really fertile ground to write some incendiary stuff, and I don't think we're going to disappoint when it comes to that.
Right. Exactly. You were mentioning that you guys in the Street Dogs have other jobs and whatnot. I mean, it's really kind of like owning your own small business and almost like a side job, you have your side job. What have you learned as almost like a small business owner of the Street Dogs? What have you learned through the years to make it a little bit better and kind of operate this whole thing all the time?
I think with bands of our ilk or genre, I think sometimes you run the risk of oversaturation when you're touring relentlessly. Clearly, there's bands that there's such a demand for them that they can do that. And they continue to grow and that makes sense. And there's a level of profit and growth for them to be doing that. And by all means, that's a lot to them and congratulations. And that's a good thing. But for us, I think we found that, we cut our teeth, made our bones, made our reputation, worked really hard, but we came to find that I think more than anybody else, I can't sit still. I always have to be doing something. And And like I said earlier, like the fire service was like a second family to me. And mm-hmm. when I went away from it, I felt like I sort of lost out and lost mm-hmm. something, and a part of me was missing. So I got to like realign myself with that and have that, and I'm super grateful for it. You know, Johnny, our bass player, he is now, he's like a fully licensed barber, and he works all the time. And mm-hmm. Pete has, is in working backline, and Matt, you know, works real estate, and Lenny works, you know, like works at a club in Jamaica Plain, and mm-hmm. he's like an assistant. He's like practically the vice president of the place. I think for us, it was important for us to find a balance in having an identification with work, with an occupation, and still being able to do shows and balance it all out. I think for us as people and collectively, that just suits us. Mm-hmm. And through trial and error and through doing it you're going on maybe 14, 15 years now. Mm-hmm. That's just how it's fleshed out, and that's what suits us now. We have that Vince Warp Tour slot coming up. You know, we have Punk Rock Bowl, and we're on a great gig at the Fremont Club the last weekend of May. I want to say it sold out really, really quick. I mean, people love the Vandals, too. The Vandals are still worth something big time.
Yeah. Right.
And I know we're playing with them May 26th. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we're going to go to Europe, too, in August for a couple of weeks. You know, I have vacation through the job, and, you know, we're going to tour Europe for a couple of weeks. And we haven't been there for a while. And then mm-hmm. we'll do our annual Christmas run, you know,
mm-hmm.
which will probably extend to about a week or so. Maybe we'll do more than just Boston shows, which we, you know, definitely do every year. We've been doing that since 2004.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rena Ninen, the host of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Over the past few years, we've looked at how women around the world are changing societal norms to increase their economic power. This season, we're focusing completely on girls, how they're pushing for a brighter, more powerful future, and what the rest of us can do to set them up for success. Join us for stories about girl power, young women who are fighting for change, to give themselves a chance to live a life of their own choosing. That's season 6 of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Karina Bemisterfer, host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast. Yes, you heard me right, daily true crime. Every day, Morning Cup of Murder tells you a straightforward, short-form story about murder, true crime, cold cases, disappearances, serial killers, cults, and more. And I do that all in under 15 minutes. With over 3 years of stories and over 20 million downloads, the Morning Cup of Murder podcast has become a staple of so many people's daily routines. So why not add it to yours? Stream Morning Cup of Murder everywhere you listen to podcasts. And remember, stay safe.
Want to know the number one money question I'm asked? It's how to get started investing without being overwhelmed. So if you're asking yourself the same question, then you have to check out the Investing for Beginners podcast. The hosts, Dave and Andrew, they break down investment terms and strategies in a way you can finally understand. I love that they're making investing accessible, and they have an entire podcast dedicated to helping you invest better. Even if you're not ready to start investing, they explain the stock market and financial updates so you can really understand what is being said on the news. If you're ready to learn more about investing, I'd recommend you start with two of my favorite episodes. Listener Q&A, how do you start investing with $1,000, where they explain how you get started right away. And Back to Basics of Building Your Portfolio, where they explain how to build a portfolio from scratch. The Investing for Beginners podcast is a great way to start expanding your relationship with money. Find Investing for Beginners podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And you guys do that all in Boston, right, the Christmas shows?
We do the Christmas shows in Boston. I think we may stretch it out. I think we may stretch it out to a couple more, maybe New York, New Jersey, and a couple of Eastern Seaboard cities. And I know going into 20, we were talking going into 2018, we want to, like, try to get back out to Southern California, maybe for St. Patrick's Day, and maybe, you know, maybe try to jump into the observatory and play that around that time. Because we met, right. I mean, the House of Bows and Arrows, we were doing that for a while.
Right.
And, you know, we're looking maybe to get back to doing a St. Patrick's Day play. Mm. I think I think that Anaheim HOB is gone.
They just reopened again.
In the same spot?
Right across the street, really, in a different area. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So. Well, maybe we'll look at that.
Exactly.
We'll look at playing the observatory. Yeah, it works for us, you know. And then I found that also we don't get burned out as a band, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times if you're out there for long stretches at a time, it strains relations.
Right.
And it's not always easy.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing it less, and like how we are, but we're still playing shows, and then people, I think, realize too when we do have shows. I think the attendance is helped the attendance too, and because people realize, hey, they're not going out,
sure,
you know, 5, 6, 7 months a year anymore.
Right.
When they come, it's, you know, you got to go see it.
Right. Exactly. We expect a new album coming out in the fall, and then you guys are going to be doing some touring in the summer and stuff like that. Where can we find Street Dogs music right now?
Obviously iTunes.
Yeah.
Google Play, Amazon. You can find it, and also I know Pirates Press has some of our vinyl on their website.
Uh-huh.
Hellcat Records, you can get our music from them. DRC's defunct, so I mean, you'd have to basically go up to iTunes to find that.
Yeah.
I mean, then people, obviously, I mean, they're going to go to YouTube and they're going to find it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know, we realize that in the days of selling, you know, the days of selling crazy amounts of records are over, you know, and I think it's people have a multitude of ways to get your music. And I think the one thing, the litmus test for bands today, no matter what your genre is a live show.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do on the stage and how honest, hardworking, and do you give 100% every night? That's something in Street Dogs that I don't think anybody, I think people who come to see us know that we go for broke and give it everything we have. And before and after the show, we're accessible to the people who come and you know, take that hard-earned money out of the pocket and buy the ticket, you know. And, you know, we're no better or no less than anybody who comes to see us. We're all on equal footing. So that's the thing that, you know, MP3s or the internet or social media or that, how music evolved into that out of mom and pop record shops and the old music industry format. The one thing you can't change is the live show. That's the thing that remains constant. And that's, you know, now with records not sounding like they were, you know, you have bands, all bands of every genre, like touring relentlessly. The upside of that is people have more of an option to go out and see something every night, you know,
no matter where they're from. Right. Exactly. Well, last question I have for you. You're obviously a big Boston fan, Boston sports fan, and your beloved Patriots won another Super Bowl. So how many do you think Brady has left in him?
Without a doubt, one more if they stay healthy.
Yeah.
With the way this team fleshes out, the team that they have right now is actually better than the one that won after the acquisitions that they've made through free agency. I think even Patriots fans are like, wow, they are not messing around.
Right.
And I'm still in shock at how we won that game against Atlanta. I mean,
yeah,
it's a good shock. Obviously, it's not like I'm not a bad like shock, but I mean, Brady and the whole team concept that Belichick has espoused and worked on and taught and everyone buys into, it's just exceptional and something to be in awe of. I mean,
right.
Clearly the guy is going to go down as the best coach in football history.
Right.
And Brady's focus and his relentless compete drive was just mind-boggling.
Right.
It's mind-boggling. And I've seen the game with him mic'd up. Like you know, I've seen in the things that he's saying and how he like rallies the troops and how everybody buys into that and how, you know, at the whistle, they're going to overtime.
Right.
No one saw that coming. Nobody.
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
Even the most diehard Patriots fans figured at the half, we're in trouble.
Right.
It was a good year.
Right, exactly.
I was thinking that at the half, like, wow, pretty good year, but not this year. You know, Atlanta's just too strong. But I think maybe it could be, you know, the sweetest one. It just, we had a couple games in New York where we didn't get the breaks when we lost to the Giants those two times.
Right.
But we play Seattle, and then, you know, the next Super Bowl we go to, we play Atlanta. We got some breaks. We got some. Like, that catch that Edelman made, it's a great catch, but at the same time, it's a big break. I mean, there's some luck in being in the right place at the right time, too.
Right. Exactly.
And that was the pivotal play in that game. I think everybody started to think, whoa, like, I thought once he made that catch, like there's certain pivotal moments in games.
Yeah.
Like when the Pats lost that Super Bowl to the Giants, where the guy caught the football on his helmet.
Exactly.
I knew we were in trouble when that happened.
Exactly. Exactly. It was that kind of turning point of you're like, oh, this is gonna change here.
All of my life I have searched for clarity. I have wrestled with two paths buried deep inside of me. I lost some rounds, been knocked around, felt my share of defeat. Yet somehow I've always managed to get back on my feet.